through the Leadership Network process probably 7 or 8 years ago with J.D. Greer, Daniel Montgomery, Sean Lovejoy, Noel Heikkinen were all in my group. And they would get all of us in the room for 2 or 3 days, and then they would bring in a mentor, and then they would just ask us questions, you know, and they would say, what kinds of things are you wrestling with in ministry? What are you struggling with right now? How can we serve each other? How can we help each other? And we would answer those questions and spend time together and long sort of 12-hour days of just engaging with each other. And every time we met, I noticed that a common theme arose. Without fail, the issue that rose to the top every single time was the need for more leaders. In fact, we would take these big white pieces of paper and put them on the wall, and we would have to fill out, like, what's your greatest need right now? And then we would have to walk around the room and look at every other pastor's. There's 15 guys in the room, every other pastor's greatest need. And without fail, it was always, we need to hire these two people. We need more leaders in this area. We always needed more leaders, everybody in the room. The need for more staff, the need for more leaders. In fact, I have never, ever, and I've coached a lot of people, hundreds and hundreds, and I have never heard a pastor say, we have all the leaders we need. We're good. We've got everybody we need. We don't have any more leaders that we need. We don't need anybody in the children's ministry. We're fully staffed. We don't need to prepare at all. We're ready to go. I've never heard anybody say that. Now, just by show of hands, and don't lie, all right, because Leonce is in the room. By show of hands, how many of you would like to have more leaders in your church? Raise your hand. Most of you, all right? A couple of you are lying or tired from pushing blackjack chips, all right? I should say, yeah, you pushed them, not pulled them, right? So anyways, in fact, why don't you just say it? We need more leaders. We need more leaders, don't we? We need more leaders. And many of us are dependent on outside people to be filling that need. Now, here's the thing. We would all say we need more leaders, and yet almost never do I see a pastor with an intentional process to develop leaders. Okay? We don't have that process. So, you know, in my undergrad Bible degree, I went to Master's College a long time ago, and then in my seminary education, I went to Talbot. I never took a single class where they taught me how to develop leaders. Got a great education, learned a lot about theology, took some practical classes, but never took a class saying, here's how you multiply yourself. Here's how you train leaders. I learned how to preach. I learned how to care. A lot of what I do now is I assume that you probably are hearing lots of good stuff on how to preach more effectively. And you're hearing lots of good stuff on how to care for people more effectively. But most of us struggle, especially in our world, with the lead piece. All right, now listen, after 25 years of ministry, that's me, 25 years in full-time ministry, I would now argue that there's perhaps no better use of your time than you investing in a group of leaders and training them and replicating yourself. In fact, I've argued repeatedly and up here in front before that this is one of your top three priorities as a pastor. A lot of you know this because we've had this conversation. Number one priority, and not in order necessarily, but three top priorities: preach. That's a good thing to do. Amen. All right. Preach. Care. All right. Primary communicator, primary visionary, primary leader developer. All right. So make sure that you preach and do that well. Make sure that you work on where the church is going to go. And then make sure that you're developing leaders. Now, my main aim today is to do two things. First of all, to convince you, and by the way, I know a lot of you in this room, and I know that most of you are not intentionally developing leaders, all right? So my first aim is to convince you that you should do that, and that if you just preach for 25 years, you won't be happy with what you've done after 25 years. My second aim is to put the cookies on the bottom shelf and to say, here's how you can develop leaders in any context. Are you in? Say we're in. All right, here we go. Why develop leaders? All right, now, why develop leaders? Here's the first reason. I'm going to give you three reasons here. Developing leaders is the biblical pattern and mandate. All right? Developing leaders is the biblical. Apparently, you're going to get all three reasons at the same time. That's like the next 20 minutes of my sermon right there. So why don't you take it off the screen, guys in the back? That'd be awesome. All right? Don't read that. Don't read 2 and 3. Close your eyes. Good. All right. No, Developing leaders is the biblical pattern and mandate. Now, you might say, I've read that text, preach the word, in season and out of season. And so you feel like, I know that I'm supposed to do that, so I preach. But did you know that developing leaders is the pattern and the mandate? Now, where do we get this? Now, both descriptive and prescriptive. All right, first of all, Jesus was a leader developer. Like, I think we know that, but have we thought about that lately? In fact, Jesus spent most of his time with just 12 men. Most of his time. How do you spend most of your time? He spent most of his time developing just 12 men who would go on to impact the whole world, including the writing of our New Testament, right? The bulk of Jesus' time was not spent in public ministry with vast numbers of people, but with smaller groups of people or in private with his disciples. In fact, did you know this? Only 17 times does the scripture record Jesus ministering to large groups of people. Do you know that? How many times have you ministered to large groups of people? Lots of times. 46 times we see Jesus in private training his disciples. That's almost three times as much. All right, now Mark 6 is an excellent example of this. We can see all kinds of examples, but we see Jesus gather his followers up. He pulls them in and he says, hey, I'm going to send you guys out now. I'm going to send you out two by two into villages. I'm going to send you out to preach and to heal. You know that passage? Somebody had to go with Judas. They were bummed out. So they got to preach and to heal. Judas was smoking a cigarette at the back of the group. So he sends them out. He says, here's what I want you to do. And you go into the village. He says, you know, don't try to upgrade into fatter houses along the way. He says, if people don't listen to you, he said, that's okay. You're not solely in charge of conversion. He sends them out. He wants them to preach and to heal. He doesn't just want them to want to preach. He wants them to minister compassion to the village that they go into. And he's teaching them in private. Then he sends them out. That's just an example of us seeing Jesus do leader development. Now, pastors, listen to me. A lot of pastors believe that their primary role is to stand in front of big groups of people and teach. And that's where they spend most of their time. But this was not how Jesus spent most of his time. And so it never fails. I have a steady stream of emails and phone calls all week and all month. Hey, I need to hire this guy. Hey, we need to hire these people. Hey, we don't have any leaders. And I know sometimes you have a need to hire somebody. I'm just saying, ultimately, you need to be raising those people up from within. Now, here's another thing that Jesus did. Just a quick side note here. You know, Jesus seldom did ministry by himself. You know that? He was not by himself. He was always with other people. He always had an entourage. You ever seen Mark Dever walk around at a conference before? He's got like seven clones walking behind him. You know, everybody's got a suit on. Everybody's following him. You see these guys at conferences that have an entourage. But you know, there's guys all over the country that are like, yeah, I went back and did Dever's residency or whatever. So you see Jesus always doing ministry with other people. Now, he would go off and pray by himself. But where were his disciples when he was doing that? They were always really close. They were always nearby. And his disciples were nearby, and he was doing this. So it's funny, I've considered this in the last few years, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I started to actually study sermons with other people. So for 10 years, it was just me. You know, I'd be working on my sermon by myself, doing my study, writing the sermon. Nobody ever saw that process. Then I thought, how is a person going to learn to preach? How's that person going to learn to preach? Because they might get a decent preaching class in seminary, but maybe not. I mean, a lot of you went to seminary. How good was your preaching class? Maybe a few of you would say it was all right. Do you still follow that pattern exactly? Don't lie. You don't still do Haddon Robinson, right? So think about it. I started having people sit with me while I prepared to preach. I know pastors now that will have 3 or 4 people sit next to them, and while they're studying, they'll say, I'm going to train you to preach. All right, so Jesus seldom did ministry by himself. All right, biblical pattern and mandate, leader development. All right, another thing is that Paul was a leader developer, right? Both Jesus and Paul, who are the two main characters in the New Testament, right? At least Jesus is the main character and Paul authored so much of the New Testament. Both Jesus and Paul were leader developers. So look at the Apostle Paul was committed to developing leaders. We see this in his investment in men like Timothy, right? Reading the book of Philemon. Have you ever preached Philemon? That will rock your world. You preach Philemon? Man, that's heavy duty. You study that book, see what was going on in slavery in the first century. See, you know, what was happening with Paul writing this letter back to Philemon. Philemon back in Colossae. Paul had never been to Colossae, but he led Philemon to Christ. There was a little house church over in Colossae. So he's sending letters back to the church in Colossae. We see leadership development all over Paul. He's constantly investing in others, not just preaching. That's what Paul's doing. Paul wrote whole books geared toward developing leaders, didn't he? We preach those books now. It's called 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy and Titus, whole books to the leaders that he was leading. And then we see Paul's commitment to leader development in the words that he wrote in 2 Timothy 2:2. So Paul says this, you know this text probably, what you have heard from me, entrust to faithful men. What you have heard from me, entrust to faithful men. All right, so why develop leaders? Because developing leaders is the biblical pattern and mandate. All right, here's a second reason. We're really practical here. All right, second reason. There are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to not develop your own. Did Doug Logan not yell at you last year about this? There are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to not develop your own. Now, what's a prepackaged leader? Someone who is seminary educated, but not jaded. All right? Gospel-centered, strong character, friends with Graham Goldsworthy, super gifted, but doesn't want your job, so they're real humble, and willing to work for $35,000 a year. You know how many of you send me emails and put that job description? I'm like, that's a $90,000 a year person, and he's already pastoring a church or whatever. You know, it's like those guys just are not out there. So you're hoping if I put the word out on the city, maybe I'll find three amazing leaders that are willing to work for $35,000 a year and willing to move to your city to get killed culturally for the next 4 years, right? Because they're from the inner city, and you're moving them to Winnemucca. Right? Hey, Winnemucca is an amazing place. Unless you're from inner city Philly, right? All right. So listen, I think we rely on this because there was an era where seminaries delivered leaders to us. All right, there was a time when if you wanted a job, you called your seminary, you got on the list. If you were a church, you called the seminary and you looked at the list, but that's not really happening very much anymore. In fact, 85% of people in ministry get a job through somebody that they know. All right, there are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to not develop your own. Now, you may occasionally hire a leader from the outside. What does Andy Stanley say? If you like your culture, hire from the inside. If you want to change your culture, hire somebody from the outside. There might be an occasional time when you'll say, man, we need somebody that will come in here from the outside and help us change something. But generally speaking, those prepackaged leaders that you're trying to find and pay very little money are not available. And by the way, they probably aren't going to work in your context anyways. Man, I'm really honestly, I didn't plan to say this, it's not in my notes, but I'm kind of living proof of that. I moved my family to Louisville, Kentucky, from Southern California. Now the people, now, go ahead and laugh. Go ahead, I'll take a drink. All right. So, and Sojourn Church felt like, hey, this will be great. We got there, and everybody, thank you. Everybody in the community that we would run into say, you moved from where? You moved from 8 miles next to the beach to Louisville, Kentucky? Why'd you do that? And we would say, man, we came to be a part of this church. We're going to start a church planting network. And we got there, and man, for 3 years, it was just like, where are we? Our people left this place. Your people stayed here. We just kept going west. 4 generations ago, we're like, we're going to keep going until we see water. And the rest of you guys stayed here. And believe me, they did stay there. Now, Louisville's a great city, but people have been there for 5, 6, 7, 8 generations in that city. I just went back and preached at Sojourn Church recently. Love that church. Love that ministry. It was just a challenging cultural adjustment because we're from a different part of the country. All right? You cannot afford to import leaders into most of your contexts. Now, I know right now you think I'm the exception. I'm just telling you, you're probably not the exception. Now, I've written a lot about this and spoken about the importance of geographic chemistry. All right, 2 years ago, I was talking to Leon Scrupp, my friend, and we were talking about this a little bit, and Leon said recently hired a person in his church from elsewhere. And Leon said this to me. In fact, I asked him last night at dinner, did you say this? Because this is what I remember you saying. Context affects competence, or context determines competence. So just remember that. You're getting ready to import somebody in from the outside. They might have been wildly successful in Winnemucca because they speak the language of the mining culture. But you're going to import them into the inner city, and they're going to go, where am I? Because this community made sense to me, and that community doesn't. All right, you can tell I love Winnemucca, right? All right, good. All right, if you want a strong team around you, you're going to have to train those people. And there's little better use of your time, because you need leaders who get your culture, who have been developed under you, and who love your city. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest mistakes I made, all right, here, I can save you about 7 years of pain if you will actually not just listen, but do this. One of the biggest mistakes I made when I planted Church Planters is I was really excited to take the older, godlier men who'd come from other churches and maybe had been elders in other places and make them elders. And what I found is that, in fact, what I'm going to say is maybe scandalous, but if I were doing this right now today, if I were doing this right now again today, I'd primarily be making the men elders that we had raised up, not the men, even if they'd been elders elsewhere, who are coming in from outside. You bring in 5 outside elders and you're a church plant that's been there for 3 years, and I know you all do that because I talk to you about it all the time. You've got 5 different sets of spiritual backgrounds on that elder team now. Now, if you're going to train up your own elders, it's going to take a while. But Doug Logan stood up here last year and said, you've got to train up people who understand your city, who get your culture, who get your context. All right? Lastly, on why develop leaders, there are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to do what God has called us to do. You understand that? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Now listen to me. Where do you expect the next generation of leaders to come from? You think they're coming from seminary? They're not coming from seminary. Where are they coming from? Say it out loud. Say it out loud. Where's the next generation of leaders going to come from? From you. From you training them up. There are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to do what God has called us to do. How are we ever going to reach Salt Lake City? I was talking to a pastor from Salt Lake City a few years ago. He was telling me that when you drive whatever the major corridor is, there's different communities, 15,000 people here, 18,000 people here. He was telling me many of those cities don't have those towns don't have a single evangelical church. I don't know of any seminary program that's training up men to plant churches in those communities. So who's going to do that? How about 750 million people in Europe? There are not enough prepackaged leaders for us to do all that God's called us to do. So I hope to at least convince you we have got to train leaders from the inside. From where? Say it. The inside. We've got to train our own leaders from the inside. All right, now how do we do this? I'm going to give you a very simple, practical, I've got 5 or 6 things here that I'm going to fly through. And if you just do these things, you'll find that it's not that tricky. All right? Number one, how do we actually develop leaders from the inside? Number one, realize that you will reproduce who you are, not what you say. All right? I say a lot of these things from personal pain and personal experience. This isn't hypothetical for me anymore because I'm 45, about to turn 46. I've been at this for a long time. You can talk about prayer all you want, but when you don't pray, nobody will pray. You will reproduce who you are, not what you say. So what that means is you better pay close attention to your life, which is what the New Testament says. Now, that's not some cliched, like, got to throw that in. I'm saying I realize that if I'm not prayerful, people won't pray. People will follow they will follow me. They will follow me as a person, not what I say. All right, so pay close attention to your life. And one of the things that I'm concerned about us sometimes is that we are professional Christians. You know that you get paid to be a Christian, a lot of you. Now, some of you work out in the business world, but some of us get paid to be a Christian, right? And that's a dangerous place to be. you're going to reproduce who you are, not what you say. All right? Here's number two, how to develop leaders. Identify a few people that you want to invest in. Like, how do I get started? Right at the beginning. Coach me through this, Brian. How do we start? Identify a few people that you want to invest in. Now, I have people that will call me and say, who should I invest in? Should I invest in the guys from other churches that have come in that are the older godly leaders? Should I invest in 19-year-old college students? Ultimately, I would tell you, it doesn't really matter. Invest in whoever you want to invest in. Choose a few people and invest in them intentionally. I'll give you a few categories to consider. Consider faithful volunteers. So, you know, for 9 years in our church plant, in fact, I haven't had the opportunity to say this out loud here, but, you know, I'm a big fan of the lead pastor in a church plant being at setup and teardown from start to end. All right? Now, I've seen a lot of pastors that can't wait to get rid of that. And, you know, they like, you know, setup and teardown, you know what I'm talking about, right? Because it's the most awesome part of church planting, you know? Setup and teardown. We love that, right? We got to get there at 6:30. It's dark. It's raining or whatever, you know, and here you are. You still have to preach, right, in about 5 hours, right? So you got to eat two meals before you even preach. So here's the thing about setup and teardown. For 9 years, I did setup and teardown. Not actually for 14 years, because an executive pastor, I did it too. For 9 years, I did setup and teardown. And the reason, part of the reason I did it is I found that if I showed up, 50 people showed up. If I didn't show up, 8 people showed up. Seriously. We never, ever, a single time stood in front and said, we need setup and teardown workers. Never. 50 people every Sunday morning, 50 people tearing down. Never struggle with that. Why? Because I was there. And when a person would say to me, hey, will you invest in me? Can we meet this week? I'd say, yeah, I'll see you at 6:30 Sunday morning. Seriously, I said that about 500 times. You know what? About 200 of those people showed up. You want me to invest in you? This is where I'll be. Serious? That's where I'll be. You want to meet with me Tuesday morning? I work on my sermon on Tuesday morning. I can't do that. But I'll be there. We'll set up chairs together. We'll serve together. And then I saw myself not as like the technician. Some of you heard me talk about that in the XP breakout yesterday, but as the person who was kind of interacting with all the people there. All right, serving the people there. All right, now, so consider faithful volunteers. Who shows up? All right, consider those who have come to Christ in your church. Don't go look for people who have been Christians for 10 years. Take the people who are brand new Christians, the people that you've led to Christ, and start to pour into them right away. Choose a group of those. Take 5 or 6 new believers. You will never have more fun than taking 5 or 6 new believers and the mess that is and the sin that they fall back into in the middle of that. They're not elders yet. Don't call it elder development. By the way, this is not elder development. This is just in training leaders. All right, consider those who have come to Christ. Look for people who are teachable and available. You know, if a person leaves for work at 4 a.m. and gets home at 8 p.m., that's a person probably that isn't available. All right, here's another thing. Live on mission and invest in non-believers. I'm talking about identify a few people that you want to invest in. Live on mission and invest in non-believers. All right, I can say, disciple making begins with non-disciples. You know that? Oftentimes we think of discipling people and we think of taking Christians who are in the church and I'm going to disciple you. Disciple making begins with non-disciples. As a pastor, as a lay person, as a Christian, live on mission and invest in non-believers. All right? So identify a few people. So I would just say, look, you're going to replicate who you are, not what you say. And then secondarily, choose a group of 5, 6, 7, 8 people. By the way, every one of you in the room can do this. You don't have to be a lead pastor to do this. Now, next, put an intentional process in place. Number 3, put an intentional process in place. Sorry, this is not on the screen. It was supposed to be, so you just have to write this down. All right, put an intentional process in place. Now, what I mean is that sink or swim is not leadership development. Sink or swim is not leadership development. It's coming, although that's my next 15 minutes of my sermon right there. Don't read ahead. I can see you and I can see into your heart, all right? So put an finally, we're at that third point, all right? Put an intentional process in place, all right? So I see the especially larger churches, you see a lot of this, like we threw him in to see what he could do. And he failed and he struggled because that doesn't work. And like four people fight through that, and they're the four most gifted people, and they were going to fight through any system. It's not you that developed them. I see this especially in large churches. Have some sort of intentional process. You know, I was here speaking to the staff with Pastor Harvey maybe a couple of months ago. I came to spend the day here, work on the conference a little bit. I was with Kyle Harvey, and they wanted me to come in and speak to the staff. There were about 25 people in there that morning, perhaps. And I walked in here in this building, and Harvey was teaching them all. They're going through an R.C. Sproul book, and they were all dialoguing about it. And I thought, this is awesome. He's not relying on them to get this elsewhere. He's teaching them and training his own staff. They're reading a book together. And sometimes Kyle doesn't show up for some of our meetings, because Kyle and I'll do a lot of work together, because he'll say, no, we've got this meeting right now. Like, these guys are committed to this. And then later Harvey couldn't have lunch with us because he had another group of leaders that he was meeting with at lunch. And he was teaching them theology twice in one day. And that was just a Tuesday that I was here. An intentional process. All right, now how do you do this? Let's start with any process is better than no process. There's a sense where, once again, don't sit there overthinking it like it's Saturday night at 2 in the morning and you're like, who should I invest in? Just write down 6 names. All right, who should I, next, what should I do? It's just not that hard. Any process is better than no process. And don't ask me to email you a process, because that's, my process is not what you need. You just need to write down, what are some things that I think a leader needs to know and be and do? That's all. All right, character, competence, content. Right, you've heard that before. Heart, what's it, head, heart, hands? All right, so content would be like, what kinds of things do I want a leader to know? So I want a leader to read things like Graham Goldsworthy. I mentioned that earlier. Hunter was talked a lot about that yesterday. I want a leader to understand some biblical theology. Now, you might start a little earlier than Graham Goldsworthy. You might start with like Life's Big Questions or something. I want a leader to understand some things about systematic theology. I'm not trying to get all seminary on you. I'm just saying something. We want to know the Bible. I want a leader to have read the whole Bible. I took 12 men through a leadership process a few years ago. A couple of them are in this room because they're now pastors. And I asked them, how many of you have ever read the Bible cover to cover? 2 of them were seminary professors. And 10 of the 12 had never read the whole Bible. Well, that's a good place to start. Let's read the Bible. That's a tricky place, huh? It's not that hard. So what kinds of things does a leader need to know? What kinds of things? All right, now these kinds of things are going to be addressed through reading and teaching, like what Harvey's doing here, going through a Sproul book. I think they're going through a book called What is Reformed Theology or something like that. All right, so how about character issues? You know, ministering in a seminary context twice, next to Master's College, next to Southern Seminary. You know, I used to teach pastor school, 100 seminary students every Tuesday morning that I would teach. What I found is that you can know a whole lot about the Bible and still be greedy and look at porn all the time, because those are character kinds of issues. So Grudem doesn't talk about greed in systematic theology. He doesn't talk a lot about that, or how much time to spend with your family. So character issues, heart issues, no amount of knowledge can shape those issues, all right? So you can have a lot of theological knowledge and be greedy or be a gossip or have hidden sin. What kind of character issues? In fact, have you ever asked leaders in your church, when's the last time you ever purposefully looked at any form of pornography? I asked that question in our leadership development, and I find that so often, it's like 7 out of 10. People will make up answers and different things like that. When you put that word purposefully in there, it changes the dynamic of the question. Those are hard issues. Now, don't go up and beat everybody. I'm saying address those things. Work with people on those things. Or when's the last time you talked to leaders about what their relationship with their wife is like? All right, so character issues. And then competence issues. What kinds of things does a leader need to learn to do? All right, so for example, I see a developed church leader knowing how to teach, knowing how to have a gospel conversation in a variety of circumstances. I remember a lady coming to me a few years ago, 50 years old, saying, hey, Brian, will you come over and talk to my friend about Christ? I think she wants to be a Christian. Her name was Karen. I said, no, Karen, but I will meet with you a couple of times, and I'll answer all your questions, and I want you to talk to your friend about how to be a Christian. I don't want to be the expert like medicine man guy that you bring everybody to. No, I want to teach you to have gospel conversations on an airplane, in your neighborhood, as you're walking around trick-or-treating on Halloween by yourself without your kids. All right? So, anyways, dressed up as a Walking Dead character. All right, so have some sort of intentional process. Now, how do you do this? Sit down for about 2 hours and ask yourself, who are the 5 or 6 people I'm going to invest in? What things do I want to take them through this year? And then start to meet with them and do that. All right, number 4 is commit relationally. I have 6 things here in terms of how to do this. Leadership development takes time. You know, so I started doing leadership development when I was, I started developing leaders when I was 23 because I was a youth pastor. I was 23. I had 300 kids in my high school youth ministry and 50 adult volunteers. And I had no idea what I was doing. All right, so they had no business hiring me, but they did because they wanted somebody they could control. That didn't work out very well. But anyways, so I realized right away, this is all about time with people, time with people, time with people. Then I moved to Huntington Beach, California, Orange County, and I spent the next 4 years taking one kid to Taco Bell every Tuesday at 4 o'clock at Beach and Garfield. One kid every Tuesday, okay? His name was Drew. Drew became a Christian while he was in high school. His dad was in jail at the time. Then his dad became a Christian. Then his mom became a Christian. Then his brother and sister both became Christians. And then his dad became a deacon and an elder in our church. And now he's 35 years old, and he's in church ministry. And when he was 14, he had pink hair and was obsessed with The Offspring. And because the lead singer, whatever his name was, lived in Huntington Beach, and so all the kids knew where he lived, and they'd show up at his parties all the time. You know, it's awesome to be a famous punk rock singer and have freshmen in high school showing up at your parties. And so anyways, my point is you have to commit relationally. This is not gospel tract evangelism time in our world. Right? This is about long-term relational commitment. We moved into our community 3 years ago. We have been immersed in our community for 3 years. I've told you a little bit about it in the past. We throw the biggest Halloween party. We started it out, you know, we started it our first year. We invited everybody over we could find, come over 2 hours before kids go out trick-or-treating. We're gonna set up a barbecue in the driveway, invite people over. It was awkward the first year, 50 or 60 people came. Some people said to us, what do you think you're doing? We don't do this on Halloween. Literally, people were bugged at us. They came and just sort of looked at each other and, you know, just, the next year, about 120 people came. People were dropping off kids in front of our house, high school students. It's like we were, you know, so we bought kegs that year for the kids, you know. So then the third year, you know, people just keep coming. Now we have the biggest Halloween party, and out of that come all of these conversations. My wife just volunteered, and she just volunteered to co-direct the school play and spent 6 months, 25 hours a week, because you know how important elementary school plays are. You know how important it is to sew on every single feather of a kindergartner's costume that's going to be on the stage for 30 seconds, all right? That's powerful. So you got to immerse yourself relationally and commit relationally, all right, both on mission and in leader development. This isn't quick. Don't find 6 people, meet with them once for 3 hours, and then go huddle up and prepare your sermon for 400 hours in between. All right, you've got to invest in those guys relationally. Commit, be available, be accessible. All right, commit to life on life. It's not just a program. There are several of you in this room that I've walked alongside in life, guys who have served on my staff, and these guys will tell you, this is a life on life, long-term, time together, commit relationally. All right, number 5 is stay the course. Stay the course. What I mean is for years and decades. And we had a lady, I'm talking a lot about mission because my heart really bleeds for mission, but again, I think leadership development begins with mission. So we had a lady named Dawn who lived upstairs from us in our condo in Los Angeles. It was kind of a 3-unit. And she was clearly mad at men, and she never really told us why, but she, you know, she never really would really open up. But we spent 9 years getting to know her. We even let her watch our kids one time after she had drank 3 glasses of wine. She showed up at our door with a glass of wine. She said, hey, can I watch your kids sometime? Will you go on a date? This took 5 years before she said that because she didn't like men or kids. So we thought she might kill our kids. And they were like, you know, all under 6 or 7. My son's down here now. He's 17. So you can close your ears for a moment. She shows up at our door with a glass of wine, already tipsy, and says, okay, I'm here. It took me 3 glasses of wine to get up the courage to do this. So we let her watch our kids that night. However, I'm sorry, Andrew, for that. However, we went to a restaurant that was like 4 feet away from our house so we could see back in, and we set up 7 baby monitors in the house. There might be a little exaggeration in that, but all that to say, we spent 9 years simply investing in Dawn and never led her to Christ. But the guy who led me to Christ doesn't even know that I'm a Christian, because he invested in me when I was in boot camp, told me the gospel, I embrace Christ, and people have looked for him. I've spoken to conferences, and people try. He doesn't know I'm a Christian. So long-term relational commitment, long-term, stay the course. All right, 5 years, 7 years, 9 years, 11 years. I just went to see a friend of mine the other day in San Diego, friends for 25 years, haven't seen each other for 5 years. Just that long-term, we connect via social media all the time, just that long-term relationship yields depth of relationship in terms of leadership development, all right? And remember this, consistency is oftentimes even more important than excellence, all right? Just show up. I mean, I didn't really prepare for my leadership development session this month. That's all right. Show up, pray, listen to a sermon together, and go out to eat. You know, whatever, just keep showing up. All right, and then lastly, I want to encourage you to think beyond your church. I was doing some reading on this as I was preparing, because I haven't spoken on this before. My assigned topic was multiply leaders, and so I was just doing some reading on this, and I've written a lot about leadership development, but I haven't spoken on it a lot from the front. So I was doing some reading on it, and I realized that 85% of the 350,000 churches in America are plateaued or declining. 85%. The average church in America is less than 90 people and baptizes one person per year. One person per year. I just feel like the task in front of us is huge. It's huge. And you got to think not just like we have to raise up leaders in our own church. We have to raise up leaders to keep sending them out, to keep sending them out. So think beyond our church. Multiplication, not addition. All right? And remember, we are the plan. And I'll close with this quote, all right? In the Master Plan of Evangelism, Robert Coleman emphasizes that the test of any Christian life is the multiplication of that life in others. In the same way, the test of any Christian ministry is the multiplication of that ministry in the lives of others. What I want to encourage you to do, all right, being a coach, which is what I am, all right, what I want to encourage you to do is I'm just going to give you a minute of time without talking here. I'm going to ask you to do a couple things. I want you to write down a couple things that you need to do walking out of this meeting. Ladies as well, if you heard this and you feel like, I need to invest in some other ladies, because by the way, if you're 35, don't be offended, you are the older lady, okay? Don't be offended, I'm talking about the Bible. You might die in the Bible when you were 40. I love how in church plants, we have a bunch of 45-year-old women running around talking about we're looking for some older women. I'm like, you are the older woman. The younger woman is 18. You understand that? I'm not picking on you. We're in our mid-40s. I'm saying the younger woman is 18 and 17 and 19 and 20. What are you going to do? What are you going to do to invest in younger women? Now, if you're offended at that, you need to pray and write down some names of who you're going to invest in. All right? So, and I'm saying that to all of us. All right, so here's what I want you to do. What am I going to do going forward coming out of this? One or two things. What do I need to do going forward to invest in raising up leaders inside our church? Take a moment, and then I'm going to close this in prayer. God, I pray that from this room, from our churches, spread out across the 13 states of Acts 29 U.S. West, I pray that we would see many, many, many leaders raised up. I pray that we would see the future generation of preachers raised up from our churches. I pray that we would not only preach, not only care for people, that we would do those things well and faithfully, but that we would also invest in groups of people, that we could send out church planters, invest in people who will impact our community, who get our city and our culture. Make us leader developers in the model of Christ, in the model of Paul, and with the mandate that the New Testament gives us. In Jesus' name, amen.